Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 system support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what today's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, a reckoning in Robeson County. Driving south on I-95, just before you hit the border with South Carolina, you find yourself in Robeson County. You don't get much of a sense of place, though, until you venture off the highway, beyond the Cracker Barrel and the Holiday Inn Express. It's then you find yourself in a community that's especially tight-knit, even by Southern standards, where neighbors and families have known each other for generations.
When I was coming up, every house on this street was full, and pretty much everybody knew everybody, and everybody looked out for everybody. But since the floods, you can see they're empty.
Robeson County has found itself in Hurricane Alley in recent years and is still recovering from devastating floods. The damage has left many in the community questioning what the future holds for the region and its residents.
There's five families on this street now compared to 14 houses. That's it.
Robeson is uniquely diverse. About one-third of its residents are Black, one-third are white, and a little more than a third are Lumbee American Indians. It's also one of the state's poorest places, and has been especially hard hit by the pandemic. And while it might seem to be a neglected corner of North Carolina, that's not so, at least politically.
When I'm reelected, I will proudly sign the Lumbee Recognition Act that should have been signed a long time ago.
That's from a late-in-the-campaign visit before President Donald Trump lost the election to Joe Biden. But Trump didn't lose in Robeson County. In fact, he won bigly. It wasn't a fluke, but the margin was a surprise, and that's leaving a lot of so-called experts wondering why. My colleagues Laura Pelliser and Jason DeBruin have both looked closer at Robeson County. Laura is WUNC's digital producer, and Jason is our data reporter. And I spoke with him more about the election results and how people in the community are dealing with COVID-19 and storm recovery.
There is no way that you can describe Robeson County as a monolith in terms of how folks vote there. If you pin down different demographics in the county, those demographics, those different groups are in no way voting blocks or voting monoliths as well.
And it's got a fascinating history. Most recently, it's been hit hard by the pandemic, as a lot of the state has, but even more so Robeson County, and hurricanes. How are they dealing with sort of that recent double hit of not bad luck, but just, you know, major problems coming their way?
I mean, it's been really, really, really challenging for a lot of folks in this community. You know, I think something striking is that the population of North Carolina has grown over the past 10 years by about 10%. Robeson County has not. Robeson County has lost population by about 3%. That, you know, means a lot certainly in a census year. It means a lot for just how much power these folks have politically. A lot of folks, you know, they went through Florence and they went through Matthew, and the community was essentially devastated. A lot of areas were completely devastated. Folks were not able to return to their homes for a really long time. That led to the decision for some people to leave, essentially, Robeson County permanently, you know, for a number of reasons, including economic reasons. And I did get a chance to speak with Pastor Rick Foreman. He is a pastor at West Lumberton Baptist Church. That was a church that was really devastated during Matthew and was really deeply impacted by storms during Florence as well. And I have a clip of him here essentially talking about what it was like for him directly after Matthew.
I was standing in the parking lot here, and most of our parking lot was across the street. It was just so devastating. It looked like a war zone out here. And all I could do was cry. I was standing there in the parking lot all by myself. And the Lord spoke to me, and he told me that he was not only going to rebuild this church and use me to do it, but that one day we would thank him for the storm.
I would say that this community is going through a lot. I also really spoke with folks who are extraordinarily resilient. A lot of people there are deeply religious, very spiritual, and their faith kind of carries them through a lot of these different challenges that they've been through in the past few years.
So elections aren't perfect problem solvers, but they are an opportunity for people most at risk and struggling to speak up about what they think is going well and what they think needs to be changed. And voters in Robeson County got that chance like we all did last week. And Jason, they made choices that might surprise some people who don't live in Robeson County.
Yeah, perhaps. They voted pretty heavily for Trump, actually, and they swung pretty far in favor of Trump. I'll just point back to 2012. This is a pretty amazing statistic to think about. In 2012, the folks in Robeson County as a whole voted for President Obama by an 18-point margin. There's about 58, almost 59% of the people who voted for President Obama in his reelection bid. That has completely flipped by 2020. So just two elections later, that completely flipped, where President Trump actually got 58, again, almost actually 59% of the vote. And former Vice President, now actually President-elect Joe Biden, got only 40%. So that flip in just 8 years is pretty astounding. If you go back a couple elections even further, in 2004, 2008, and 2012, Robeson County voted for the Democratic nominee consistently. In fact, they increased their support. The margin in 2004 was sort of slim. In 2008, that first Obama year, it increased. And that second Obama year, it increased even more, which is actually a little bit counterintuitive because many places, North Carolina as a whole actually included, showed overall less of a support for Obama in his reelection bid than they did in 2008. As you probably recall, North Carolina voted for Obama in 2008, but did not vote for Obama in 2012. So even though North Carolina decreased its support for the president, Obama at the time, Robeson County actually increased it, but then swung completely to the right, both in 2016 and especially in 2020, giving President Trump an 18-point margin of victory just in that county.
And you use the word counterintuitive. And you might look back to when Robeson County was voting blue and think that seems intuitive because of the high number of African Americans and Lumbee Indians, people of color generally back then voted for President Obama. And the counterintuitive part is lately voting for President Trump. And Laura, that leaves us with the million-dollar question. Why? Why is Robeson County in the last two elections, especially in this last election, really swung to President Trump and gone red?
In the lead up to the election, that was absolutely the question that I was trying to answer. So I drove out through Robeson County. I visited a couple folks in rural areas, and then I sort of drove through Pembroke and spoke with a couple people there as well. And I was trying to find out what was going on in that county as well, because, you know, as you drive through downtown Pembroke, you'll see Lumbee's for Trump signs. This was ahead of the election. Lumbee's for Trump signs, bright red signs, you know, stuck in lawns all over the area. And it was really fascinating speaking with people because they were very excited, but they were also very skeptical. And the skepticism was across the board. I spoke with Trump voters. I spoke with a gentleman who did not disclose, you know, who he was voting for. And then I spoke with some Biden voters. And everyone was skeptical. And the reason why they were skeptical is because throughout October, essentially, both Biden and the Trump campaigns homed in on Robeson County and started really focusing on this question of Lumbee recognition. And both Trump and Biden made big statements saying that, yes, they were 100% in support of full federal recognition.
Which the Lumbees don't have right now. They're not a federally recognized tribe.
Exactly. Lumbee were able to secure state recognition back in 1885. So it's been a really long time that they've been state recognized. And then essentially they've been vying for full federal recognition since that time for at least, you know, a century. And essentially what this all means is that if you secure full federal recognition, you have access to significant benefits from the federal government. You have a little bit more leeway in terms of self-governance, sort of making your own decisions. In this case, the Lumbee tribe would have access to millions of dollars. It does stack up to millions in federal benefits. So that represents a lot of money for an economically depressed community, essentially. It is not a Band-Aid solution. You know, it can help, but for a lot of folks, they see it as a complicated, kind of complex answer that doesn't solve everything that a community faces. And so you've got both Trump and Biden who essentially make these big statements saying, we are 100% in support of federal recognition for the Lumbee tribe. And then Trump follows that up with a rally.
Thank you very much. And it's great to be in Lumberton. And I'll tell you, we have a lot of friends here. They said, please stop by. We said, let's do a quickie. We're on our way to Wisconsin.
Really a kind of almost a game day rally. It was just about a week. It was October 24th, so really close to the election day. And I had the pleasure of listening to about an hour and a half of this rally of Trump's speech. And he really does focus on, you know, how much he valued this community, how much that he wanted to get really secure this federal recognition for people. So when I spoke with people, they said, really happy to see this is on the table. Some folks said that they were sort of honored and excited to have Trump come to Robeson County and to also highlight when Trump arrived, he acknowledged the leader of UNC Pembroke, this historically Lumbee college. And for a lot of folks, that was really significant. You know, to have this attention on the school that they're so proud of was something that a couple folks that I spoke with felt proud about. So all of this may have played a role. And then I will say I spoke with Chris Cooper, who is a head of the Faculty of Political Science over at Western Carolina. And he was really cautious about talking about how much influence this late rally may have had. You know, it's early, right? No one's making any big claims of knowing why people voted a certain way. But in terms of that rally, he said the number one political capital that any candidate has is attention and time.
And I think showing attention to specific concerns is what politicians do to get elected. And putting time, which is the most valuable resource the candidate has, into a specific place shows interest, perhaps more so than anything else. So clearly things are already moving in this direction. I don't think it was a game changer, but perhaps it did help seal the deal for President Trump in this county.
And so by him flying in, you know, hosting this rally for thousands of people, he showed people that he values them, that he's paying attention to them, that he's listening to them. And that's possibly why we're seeing a few more people go for Trump.
So if I could just respond to that real briefly, we're actually seeing that exactly in the data. This is going to get a little bit number heavy real quick, but stay with me here. I looked at all the precincts in Robeson County, so to try to break it down even more locally. There's 39 precincts in the county. In the 19 precincts that voted most heavily for Trump this year in 2020, so about half of the precincts, the ones that essentially you can say delivered Trump the victory in Robeson County, about five of those are at least 55% white. So perhaps not a huge shock to see that heavily white precincts voted for President Trump. In the remaining 14 districts, they are all at least half, 45%, but almost half American Indian. Conversely, in the precincts that voted most heavily for President-elect Biden, those precincts were almost exclusively black precincts. So it's really interesting to see that the precincts that make up black populations voted heavily for President-elect Joe Biden, precincts that are heavily made up of white populations and especially American Indian populations are the ones that delivered this resounding win for President Trump. Now, obviously, it's not 100% of one type of population live only in a precinct, right? And of course, we don't know how anybody voted individually. But being able to look at these precincts and overlay population data with how the vote turnout was in those precincts, it becomes pretty clear that exactly as Laura was saying, it's the white populations and especially the American Indian populations in Robeson County that helped deliver a victory for President Trump there.
And it really does seem like it's specific to President Trump. While the entire county went Republican for governor and senator and all the Council of State races, the percentage was much more significant for Trump for president.
Absolutely. What you're saying is absolutely correct. You look at all the down ballot races. Yes, Republicans did win those races, but not nearly to the extent that President Trump did.
Just add to that, Dave, that, you know, when I was there visiting folks, I spoke with a gentleman named Anthony Locklear, and he was a retired public school teacher at Robeson Public Schools.
It's really great that we had the rally, you know, whether you're a Trump person or not. It brought people recognized our university. He asked the chancellor to stand. He's a former classmate of mine, so I'm real proud of that. Anytime the president comes to your county, whether you're a Trump person or not, it's a big, major thing.
He was a very sweet gentleman who kept showing me photos of his family on his cell phone. But he was pretty frank in telling me that, look, he's a registered Democrat, but he does not stick to that when it comes to his presidential vote.
I used to vote years ago straight Democrat, but, you know, I got away from that. You know, it depends on the person and what they stand for and what I think they can do for our country.
And so I think that, you know, having someone who says, yeah, in the past, I used to vote Democrat pretty much down the ticket. And he says, I don't need to do that anymore. He doesn't feel like he is stuck voting a certain way. And he seemed to feel comfortable pivoting for presidential elections.
So, Laura, looking ahead, this is the kind of place, Robeson County, Lumberton, that you'll likely want to keep track of because it is unique, really interesting place. They're dealing with major problems. Those problems aren't going to go away overnight. What will you be looking for?
I am looking into so many different things right now. I'm really, really curious about how the coronavirus is going to continue to play out in this community. On average, Robeson County has about double the number of cases per capita and about double the number of deaths per capita. That's compared to the state numbers. We are still in a hurricane season. That doesn't wrap until the end of November. And this is a county that, as I mentioned before, was really hard hit by Florence, really hard hit by Matthew, and is essentially not prepared for the next big one. They're making a lot of mitigation efforts. They're really trying. They're still waiting for some funding. But as it stands right now, if another big hurricane comes through, there's not all the measures in place to protect folks.
Laura Pelliser is a digital producer, and Jason DeBruin is a data reporter at WUNC. For more of Laura and the digital team's reporting on the area, check out their multimedia project, Lumberton Undeterred, at WUNC.org. Hang tight, more in a moment.
Hi, I'm Russ Henry. I work with Dave here at WUNC. COVID-19 pretty much put a stop to the world as we know it. And while it may be the biggest news story of the year so far, it's far from the only major story we're covering at WUNC. Our team is working tirelessly to keep you updated and put headlines about public health, politics, race relations, education, and the unique culture of our state in context every single day. And we're only able to tell you these stories with your support. So if you've enjoyed this podcast or any of WUNC's other shows and content, there's a really special way to show it. Visit WUNC.org and click the little heart at the top of the page to give now. Your support as a member of WUNC is invaluable to our work and how we're able to help keep you on top of a relentless news cycle. So consider a donation after this episode ends. And as always, thanks for donating and thanks for listening.
The pandemic has taken a disproportionate toll on people in Robeson County and the Lumbee Tribe, but the community has always proven to be resilient, and last weekend, they adapted to COVID-19 precautions so they could celebrate their annual autumn fish fry. The Lumbee Tribe shared photos, videos, and history on social media, explaining the long-standing fall tradition. For generations, the Lumbee would celebrate the harvest with a fishing trip on the coast. It's right around that time that the spots, a saltwater favorite, are ready to be caught. Many families would bring home their catch to clean, batter in cornmeal, and fry. And when there was enough to go around, they shared it with neighbors in celebration. This year's party looked a bit different. Instead of a crowded picnic, singers and dancers socially distanced, while volunteers cooked up the spot outdoors. Others loaded up the trunks of cars with meals and PPE to a long line of vehicles that came through.
You good, young lady? Yes, ma'am.
Lumbee Tribal Chairman Harvey Godwin says it was still a good time.
And we're just so happy to be here today, and there's been long lines, and we're giving away lots of food and supplies. As you know, this pandemic is not over, and we had to do a drive-through. But it's just a blessing to look down the road and see all the Lumbees that have come here today for fellowship, even if it's in their cars. This is just a great day.
Here's hoping that next year, everyone can pull up a seat together again. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Our producers are Charlie Shelton Ormond and Rebecca Martinez. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.